Me, 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 me. Yo, you know what? I can't even hear you, dude.
It's Kevin McCarthy joint. Oh, my man lost for the 12th time. I just got the alert. What a loser.
That's how you want to open this up?
Yeah, well, I mean.
Call Kevin McCarthy a loser? All right, cool. I mean, I'm with it, man. It's whatever.
I mean, I'll tell you why I feel that way off the record. You know, they be watching. You know, Devlin them busy. My man, Bibby.
They real busy. Donald Trump them busy. Them people outside, baby.
Nah,
hey, you know what? But perfect. Look, let's use that because we wanted to talk about Atlanta in some part today. So,
oh,
perfect,
that's
man.
Right. Now stage. That barbershop yeah. episode was elite, man.
It was fire, man.
It's such a perfect song.
Where's the song from, bro? It's perfect. Look, they're thinking we about to come in saying we're stressed right now. I am as cool as a gentle summer's breeze. We are not stressed at the moment. Well, we may be. But we're going to talk about how we've learned to mitigate stress.
Yo, I thought you were about to like say a sonnet just now.
Oh, nah, I'm cool, man.
A limerick.
West, stressed out. percussionist poetry. Remember the joint from Youth and Revolt?
God. Yes.
Sism Wop.
I was just thinking about that movie the other day. It's crazy.
Who's ever thinking about Youth and Revolt? Man?
Never, which is why I never say anything.
Nick
that.
Twist.
I was like, that's a little weird.
I got it on DVD, man. I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, I wish I didn't throw all my DVDs out, but I ain't have any space for that stuff.
Hey, man. Oh, yeah, you live in New York, but I've traveled. Oh, this is actually 1996. I thought this was a 93 song.
Oh, so we were old enough to get it. Kind of.
Yeah, we were stressed. Yeah, I was stressed at 9 years old. Yeah, I had real life problems going on.
It was New York, man. We were all a little stressed.
Actually,
man.
I wasn't in New York at 9. I mean, I was back and forth between New York, but I wasn't like going to school
in it, yeah.
at 9. Yeah, so nah, I was having.
You was on the I-95, boy. At all the rest stops.
Well, folks, you all know that I'll do the intro today, man. We had episode,
yeah,
I was going to say 10. We're at episode 104 of the Lunch Break Podcast. Welcome. I am one of your hosts, Zan Truluck. I'm here with my good brother and bestie, Stuart Cornelius. Say what's up to the people, Stu.
Yo, what's going on, my people? Happy Friday to y'all. Well, we're recording on Friday, so happy Friday to y'all. By the time y'all hear this, it'll be Monday. So
yeah,
we thinking about your work week.
I'm not at all. I've got a little bit more time before I start thinking about people's work weeks.
That's fair.
And this week, man, people have been pulling me into work adjacent conversations, and I've been trying to maintain boundaries as much as possible.
And it's funny, Matrix, trying to dodge them joints.
And you know, it's coming digitally, right? So people are hitting me with the text messages like, hey, Zan, I know you really don't want to talk about work things right now,
yes.
but I need to pull you in as a mentor, as a and like when you put the title on it, it adds responsibility and I want to show up for you. So maybe that'd be something to talk about today is how we've talked about showing up in our various roles through therapy, because today's topic is all about us being Black men who go and get therapized. So
yeah, get on mine right.
Yeah, man.
Which is. I mean, yeah, let's get into all of the.
Why'd we start with that song? How does that song make you feel, bro?
Stressed out by Tribe Called Quest. Well, I appreciate it because it does remind me of simpler times, obviously. But
I think how oxymoronic.
I mean, right. But I mean, the song content now hits a lot different as on the other side of 35. And so, yeah, I mean, I think our journey as individuals
man,
would also
on the us, other side of nine, like, now that I'm, like on the other side of nine, I feel like I saw real stressful problems when I turned 10. In 97, it got real.
I mean, look, everybody, I mean, it's funny. And that's maybe a question we could talk about later is like, what's your, I guess, oldest memory of stress? We could come back to
prompt.
It. But yeah, it's a good prompt,
like,
right?
I'm gonna use that at work when I go back. Yeah, that's a great prompt. It's a good icebreaker. Go ahead.
It was trivial. Like it's like kid stuff. It's like, damn, I'm trying to get these new sneakers when they come out. I wonder if I'm able to get them. You know what I'm saying? Like it's like silly shit. It wasn't like anything. I mean,
outside of that,
my mom being sick, that's pretty much all I had.
Well, those are magnanimous events, though.
True.
That other one you mentioned.
Magnanimous.
Gosh,
is that the word of the day?
Joke. It could be. I didn't intend for it to be, but that way, that's a good piece to put some break in it, because it's like, man, you can't go from my dog's mom passing to what I wanted to say about my my childhood drama, man. Like, because, you know, well, one, that question, it's a good one, but it also forces you to go and revisit things. And
yeah,
maybe that's even cool for today's topic of conversation, because therapy requires a lot of revisiting. And whether you did it on the front end, you do it through therapy, or you explore thereafter, it's a requirement, revisiting and pointing it in the right direction. But when you ask that question, it makes me revisit, like, well, what was the first thing that really messed up my life as a kid or ruined something?
Like, yeah,
like you said, yours was trivial. Mine are probably trivial as well. But the first thing that actually came to mind was my turtle dying. And
oh, man, like, you had a turtle? My Uncle George had a turtle. Man.
And I love Ninja Turtles to this day.
Yeah,
I love Ninja
that makes
Turtles.
Sense.
I almost said my first turtle's name, but it's one of my like security questions. So I'm not about to give y'all what my first turtle's name is, like my first pet's name. This is how people get hacked all the time. And now my news are all over the internet because they're already all over the internet, but they're all over the internet because I've told people that my turtle's name is blank. So
I'm
gonna
save
that. Yeah, I'm cool.
Yeah, I don't even know that.
Yeah, nah, you won't, man. Some lines you don't cross.
Look, no, that's real.
I mean, what, you know how many people didn't even know my middle name until you announced it at my wedding?
Oh shoot, that's real. Dang, I didn't
Zoom
think
folks,
about that.
Yeah, man. Like, I as open book as I am, there are just some things. It's like, it's need to know basis. Why would you need to know the ills of my ghetto past? You don't need to know that I have a hyphenated
middle name.
Stick around
long enough, you might find out.
Like, look, you encounter Zantuan, so you already know what the rest of the names are going to look like.
Right, that's true.
All right, man. Episode 104. We are 4 in.
004.
004 out here. We're doing this too, man. Like, we're podcasting for real.
Yes,
our audio should be extremely crisp. I will give you this guarantee today. Stuart has upgraded me. So y'all, Stu bought me a microphone for Christmas, which is extremely dope. Stu is a person who is always going to give you a functional gift. He is the utility man, and it's always going to be something you need.
Straight line thinking.
So Stu hit me with the podcast. And for many years now, Stu and our other homies have been investing in me with their gifts. So, like, either investing in my creativity with toys and things that are going to inspire me, or just like, hey, man, you need this. I want you to go pursue art, push into it. So Stu bought me my Apple Pencil for my iPad, like in 2018, bought me this mic. And not this, he did also buy this mic, but the mic that I was using at first wasn't the same quality as Stu's mic.
It wasn't great, yeah. This one has a little weight to it.
But I didn't know that it wasn't the same quality. And after we had some audio issues over the first three episodes, Stu's like, yeah, man, I think it might be the mic. I got you. I sent you another one. It should be there on Tuesday. He's like, I sent you the one I sent you is the same quality that I use. So, like, I can appreciate, like, maybe Stu has really good items. So I can appreciate that maybe it was really expensive. He was giving me the starter kit to get me interested in it, and then I go and invest it myself. But when I get this mic, it's hefty. It's weight. Yeah. It feels like Thor's hammer.
That's right.
Like, this is incredible. You're a nerd for knowing that. But like, really, thank you, man. We're set up good. So folks, the audio should be fantastic.
We're solid
this week.
That's right. And we have an Instagram handle now, finally.
Yeah,
so lunch.breakpod on Instagram. You'll see it quite a bit.
Don't you hate that we had to put the dot in there?
I hate it, but yeah, it is what it is. But yeah. But yeah, I mean, go follow, tell your friends, tell your grandmama now.
Engage with us, because we're putting out the content to engage with y'all. And that engagement stuff matters. Metrics matter. So I'm going to just make the request here. And I don't ask people for things. That's probably something.
Yeah, ask Mike, man. I don't ask people something
for us to deep dive when we talk about this therapy topic. I keep trying to bring us back to it so we don't get too far off. But
no,
yeah,
that's real.
Y'all, engage with
but
our
follow,
page.
Subscribe, download, yeah, all those things. DM us about things you want to talk about, want to hear our perspective on. I'm happy to kind of create a new segment out of things that you all want to hear.
Yeah, we got a robust content calendar. I'll give you that. We're ideating all the time, but we're always flexible and we could be agile and just slide something in. So it's like, we just want to hear. We've even talked within three episodes about what the people are saying. And even my comment about the audio is, it's more of me scrutinizing us than anything, but feedback matters. So
no,
if there's anything you all
I'm
can
with
give
you.
Us,
yeah, that's why this works. I appreciate that.
All right, man. So
Let's get into it, though,
Look, I haven't talked to my dog in a couple of days, y'all. This is what this is really supposed to be, us taking our lunch break to
That's
talk.
Right.
So we do have some guided discussion coming up. But you were asking me earlier, what did I do last night? Why am I tired right now? And I just want to get that on the air.
Yeah, because you don't go nowhere. So what the hell? Why are you tired?
Absolutely nowhere. Actually, so I went out with Justin Moore, J-Mo, and Nick last night, Nick Charles. And
shout out to our Morehouse brothers.
Shout out to our Morehouse brothers. Happy belated birthday to Justin. It was Justin's birthday yesterday. He's not a gentleman who likes to celebrate his birthday, as I learned yesterday, in any big way. But I want to make it known here.
Big him up.
This is a great man, a statuesque figure of wholesomeness and good energy in the world as a human citizen of this global world, man. Just Justin does so many things. He's a civil rights attorney, just a person who invest in his community very deeply, and not just his community here in Dallas, but it's the Black community abroad. And again, being a global citizen, cares about the rights of all humans. So dope work that you do, man. We appreciate you. We celebrate you. Nick, thank you for the tickets, bro. We were sitting in the family section last night, so I got to feel a little mixy. Nick is a realtor. Realtor, business owner, Black clothing executive.
Godspeed,
so Stu is wearing a Godspeed tee, not prompted by Nick at all, right?
Nope. Like, just family.
We like to support the homies. So Nick was in town yesterday and he hit me. He was like, "Yo, man, what you doing tonight?" I'm like, "Nothing. I'm always in my home. Like, what am I ever doing?" And he was like, "Man, trying to go to the game tonight." So I'm like, "Yeah, I'm thinking about the traffic because y'all, I live about 30 minutes outside of Dallas proper." And I'm just like, "Man, that's like an hour drive right now." But, you know, I figured it out. And I'm in my sweats. I'm always in a sweatsuit. I'm in a sweatsuit right now. So I'm like, well, let me just think of how I can dress up this sweatsuit. So as long as I don't have to change, I'll leave the crib. So we go to the game and we're in the family section because Nick is a realtor, as I noted, and he's also friends and a realtor to NBA players. So Nick was able to leverage that relationship to get us some seats and incredible good seats, great game. In some ways, the Mavs got blown out. They put a 30-piece on them. They played the Celtics last night. So
and they had just gotten beat pretty bad.
Bro,
so
Tatum is a monster, bro.
Yeah.
Like, it's
when he wants to be, he really is a killer.
Yeah. I mean, we got to see Tatum and Luka last night. So
that's real.
It was a great
Jaylen
night.
Brown,
so
you got some folks.
Tired because we went out. We had some enjoyment thereafter. Go to the bar. You know, I don't drink. So
I was
going to
say, Zan doesn't drink.
Like,
so that doesn't even mean nothing.
But it's late too. It's like, we didn't get to dinner. We went to Carbone's and we didn't get to dinner until like,
ooh, y'all some New Yorkers,
9:45, man. It was actually Justin's thought, man.
Oh, word? Respect. You know, I mean, he's a lawyer. That makes sense.
Yeah. And I'm not, the food was solid.
Okay, I was about to say, were you out? Because one thing about Zan that you all got to know is Zan is very serious about what he puts in his body.
And I'm fastidious
from a food standpoint.
Well. Yeah, so what I'll say is I'm hard on Italian food in general after going twice.
Absolutely.
So I just, it's tough to impress me. Yeah. But because Carbone's is a New York establishment, at least it's going to give us the New York red sauce type of vibe that we need. So it at least meets that measure for sure. Perfect. But with the Carbone's, broke bread with the homies, and then they wanted to go out after Carbone's. We didn't get to dinner until 10. I'm like, man, we're still outside of the streets. My dog goes to bed at 9:00. So do I.
Shout out to Venice.
Yeah, shout out to Vinny. Vinny Viducci, as my mom calls it. Venice, look, you got me talking about Venice instead of them. So we get out, we go to the spot here in Dallas. I won't like pub this spot. They don't need our promo.
Nah,
but we
need to check
then
we
get
that.
There.
That'll come.
And, you know, yesterday was J5. So
that's right.
Leaps out in the streets yesterday.
Yep, and I was with Mike and Trey yesterday.
Yeah, so I get to the bar and Lee Bryant is there. I'm like, wait,
another Morehouse brother,
shout
out.
Yeah, so like, and Lee's there, Marcus Traylor, just like, it's mad people that also those that I hadn't seen in a while. So it was cool. And we got to kick it with our homies in the spot for a little bit. But then I look up and it's 1:30 and I'm getting home. So I'm exhausted today because I just don't. And I got home and watched Dexter.
Right.
Yeah, everything's off, man. All right,
well, I'm happy you got a little fellowship, though, man. It's always great when you see people you haven't seen in a minute. Shout out to Marcus Traylor. I ain't seen my brother in a long time.
A while,
so
man.
Happy he's doing well.
Yeah.
Shout out to the noobs, too, man. Happy J5 to those brothers.
Yeah, it's J6 now, man. We talk about therapy. Yeah. It's over for them. No, I'm just kidding. all right, man.
We know so many of them.
so many of them, man. All right, so. Stressed out is where we started, y'all. We're not actually stressed out, but we do want to talk about therapy today and building on the conversation that we had last week, where we kind of touched on it lightly. And in my 2023 reflections, and as Stu talked about, I think you said it's been about 8 years of therapy that you've done, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we thought it would be, it would be smart of us, and it would be responsible of us to come on today and expand on what therapy looks like, our journeys there. And really, I guess the main topics we talked about were demystifying and destigmatizing therapy. And we've seen some examples of it, but while we were talking about it, we realized there was a severe lack of examples of what that looks like from a destigmatization and demystification standpoint. We tried to pass back and forth the examples on TV we may have seen over the years of people going to therapy and whether or not that jive with our experiences. And we thought it was a good conversation to really just bring in for you all today to talk about what it looked like to get to a therapist, what brought us there, like what made you get to point A. We're going to talk about funny reflections, hopefully, of just things that happen in therapy, whether that's a revelation or just, well, this really wasn't how I saw it when I watched it on TV 10, 20 years ago.
And it was always funny. Like, it was never really,
my therapist is like, I have fun with my therapist, to be honest.
Oh, you got to. Yeah. I mean, but I think when you go into it at first, though, you're not there yet. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not quite, you're apprehensive. Like, therapy only works if you talk. And I think a lot of people go in there thinking the therapist is going to tell them these things. Like, no, you have to like open up in order for this to work.
All right, man, let's do the guided discussion version of it, because I feel like that's going to come out, right? So one question that we came up with when we were pre-producing this episode was, what was your impetus?
We do it.
We get it in. What was your impetus for going to therapy, though, bro?
Oh, man, I think for me, it was part failed relationships and part realizing that, you know, as a first generation Ghanaian American, like not all of the ways that I was raised was the right way to be raised, but also the trauma of losing my mom, which I had always used. And we've talked about this before, the trauma of losing my mom, I've always used as kind of fuel to push me to do more, to be better, to do all of these different positive things, never really taking into account the other side of that sword, which, you know, has abandonment issues, that has a little bit of trust issues, because when you lose a parent at such a young age, you know, it's easy to throw people away. Like the most important person that you've had in your life, like, is gone. Like nothing. And then this is how I was programmed. Nothing in my mind would ever be worse than this. And so whatever thing I would run into, or whatever heartbreak, I was like, oh, well, you've been through worse. And then you just kind of push on without really dealing with the effects of those different things. So, dealing with the other side of that level of loss, and then dealing with kind of deprogramming some of the things that I picked up from my upbringing as well.
So
that's what made me go.
Be as candid as you want to be.
Yeah.
And I actually don't know, y'all. So I'm not saying this from a position of I have some information that you all don't. Or if I do, I just don't recall it at the moment. But I guess I heard relationships in there. I heard the mom thing. But losing your mom has been a long-term thing, right? So when I ask what was the impetus, I feel like, at least in my journey, and it may not be true for you, but in my journey, it's like there is an event that happens. And I look at that event and say, okay, I've got to go get it together. Was there an actual instance that precipitated this? Or it was like, well, nah, something you woke up one day, it was like, today's a therapy day.
It had been suggested to me a couple of times, and I kind of brushed it off from former partners. And I was just kind of like, yeah, I mean, one, it was like my insurance was never really good enough to do it. So like when I did start, like it says 8 years, literally I worked at Twitter for 8 years, and that's when I got good insurance. So that
and we'll talk about that today, right? Because that financial aspect is really important.
Yeah. So that was the first portion of it. And then it was just like, you know, wouldn't it be nice to just have a conversation without judgment and just see what I find? You know, there were so many different things in my life that I suppressed that, you know, the brain just kind of, you know, it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Like the brain kind of suppresses you from trauma, and you forget certain things that are hurtful. And I had a therapy session with one of my therapists, Michelle Nguyen,
first and last names to therapists. I'm not giving y'all Wayne's last name.
She was great. She was amazing.
By the way, just real quick, just hold the thought. Therapy session with Michelle Nguyen. Wynn. I believe her name should actually
Wynn, yes.
Y'all, my therapist, I just found out last month that Wayne is not his first name, and it blew my mind. I feel like he's been lying to me. So go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's some real trust issues right there. Oh, my God. That's nuts. I'm sitting on the couch, and I remember this very specific event where, you know, I had a family member that, you know, inappropriately touched me over some time. Mm-hmm. And my brain suppressed it. I don't even remember what we're talking about. And instantly I remember it clear as that. Like, it happened yesterday. I remember like this log of memories just came almost like Memento, the movie Memento. Like, it just came. And I could see it.
Old school bag with that reference.
I know. We're other side 35, bro. Yeah, I could see it vividly, you know, the different instances, what was happening, what color the carpet was, what was on the TV, like what the weather was outside, all of these like succinct details. And I broke down, and that became something that we had to unpack and just kind of, I always liken therapy to, picking up landmines that have been left in your journey, mm-hmm. Diffusing them so that they can't be triggered by another, instant or another, you know, action or behavior or incident. For me, it wasn't like a single, you know, moment that made me say, oh, I got to go to therapy. Like, it wasn't dire, but it was just like, in my mind, it made logical sense that I would give this a shot, I guess.
I'd argue that that was a single moment, right? A single moment of overwhelm and a rush of emotions and memories is a single moment. Maybe I misframed that. And one, before I say anything else, thank you for sharing that, man.
Yeah, no problem. Of course.
Like, you know, you've had 8 years of really understanding this, so your narrative is clear that you have mastery over it, and you can share it with us without it causing pain. But it does require us to relive and rethink things, even if it's minute. So thank you for sharing it, man. And me and Stu are not therapists at all, just to be clear.
No, we are
but
not.
This is just how we talk to each other.
He's an econ major. I'm a business major. Right.
I don't even know where I was going, man. But yeah, so that instant, maybe I phrased the question in a way that may have been unfruitful for the conversation, because I wasn't trying to pull that it had to be a breakup. But also, like, even in that, I think it's important to note for our listeners and just for anybody out there that may benefit from this, if you're going to therapy because of relationship problems, it's okay too. That's a stigma that I think we need to remove. I've had many people tell me, I never wanted to go to therapy because I couldn't get over a guy or a woman or whatever. Like, if that's actually why you need to go to therapy, then go. Stop putting these boundaries and these ideas on why, when, how you should go to therapy. And I think you should just go. And that's why I asked that question about the impetus. Because there is, whenever someone goes, it's never, oh, I've been, or at least in my understanding and my interactions with people and conversations around this, it's never been, oh, I woke up today and I was okay, and I decided to go to therapy because I want to be more okay than I am right now. It's something happened. There's some realization. There was this, okay, I'm fed up with behaving in a given way.
Yeah.
There was also something for me where, oh, so you mentioned that it had been suggested several times to you by partners of the past.
Yes.
And similarly, I think a lot of people, when they finally go, it's the, what's the final nudge in the voice of reason that tells me the same thing other people have been telling me, or tells me the thing that my experiences have been telling me through wisdom, but I'm not listening to.
Right.
Who's that voice that's going to tell me, okay, it's finally time to go and solve this thing, to work through this thing, or to talk to someone about the thing.
And before you go into what, you know, got you to actually go, I want to mention that a portion of those conversations was my inability to communicate certain things, which stems from my childhood, because my mother was sick and I never wanted to bring her bad news. I never wanted to further exacerbate her condition. So it made me more of a recluse when it came to communicating hard feelings-y kinds of things, which transferred into previous relationships. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's like when you know more about yourself, it allows for you to detect and you can see the behavior. You can see the patterns. It's amazing. It really is the best thing I've ever done for myself.
Dope, man. You called it navigating the minefield, or you you gave us that metaphor. I look at it as navigating the potholes and pitfalls. As a person who loves driving and doesn't want to keep paying $400 for tires every time I hit a pothole, I'm always thinking about navigating the potholes.
Cracking them sensors. Back in Philly, too, man.
But it is very much that. So you're learning so much about yourself, and then by using that data, you gain insights that help you to navigate the road forward, is basically what it is.
Yeah.
All right, so I guess I'll answer the question to my impetus. I honestly just want to say I was wilding.
That could be enough.
And really, right, I had been... So the first time I tried, because it does not always work on the first try. And I think
it almost never works on the first try.
But there was impetus. There was stimuli. There was something that sent me there. Yeah. And it was my own behavior and a reckoning with, and you all have heard me say this several times about just, it's sad that in three episodes you've heard me talk already about how terrible I've been with my relationships and women and such. But it was that. And it was probably at the darkest time of my life. And the worst from a behavioral standpoint. And the reason I decided to go to therapy is because I had treated someone absolutely terribly. And I've treated people terribly before that, but this time I was faced with that. And
at reckoning.
And being faced, and this individual was actually someone who was so, one, just extremely intelligent in general, but was so profound and poignant and poised. Y'all know I like alliteration in how she addressed my behavior. And she was previously a teacher, so it makes sense, but she was giving me teachable moments. It's like, I can navigate around my own hurt right now to explain to you, to have you come kind of take a seat next to me and see what you've done and how it's impacted me and how it could impact people. Yeah. And then from that impact on others, it's like, well, you know, I've never really thought about my impact on people. Yeah. At that time, I had not thought about my impact on people from a relationship standpoint. And not only that, you know, there were so many things impacting me that was making me impact people. And that's really what it was. I need to go. Absolutely.
It's the realest, simplest.
I needed to go and see what those impacts were. And I'm not going to, for this specific instance, I will not wholly blame my childhood. However, it's important to note here that my childhood, as many of ours may have been, but my childhood was filled with a lot of tumult and chaos and transience and all these other things. And I've never wanted to blame that on my behaviors, and I've never used it as a scapegoat. So what it made me do is I've said I've achieved all these things in spite of kind of what you were talking about, right? Like, you use it as a positive driver, blah, blah, blah.
Absolutely.
But my achievements were things that weren't important, really, if we're talking like, and one of the things that this woman said to me, she said, and it was in our breakup phase, and it was like right before I tried to go to therapy. And she was saying, well, so we were breaking up as I was starting a brand new job. And absolutely, right? And that story in and of itself is just pretty ridiculous. I don't know if we're far. It's been six years, but I want to be a little more removed.
No, it's, let's exercise some discretion.
We're breaking up as in going through the breakup process, because it's always a process, as I'm relocating, starting a new job, all of that stuff. And the new job, she said something to the effect of, well, I got mad one night. It was like, look, I can't do this all night. Like, I really care. I want to figure this out, but I am tired and I got to go to work in the morning. And
conversations are the worst. Oh,
they are the worst. And she says something to the effect of, well, I mean, your career is always going to be fine. That's one thing that'll never be messed up with you. You're always going to excel in a career, but you like this relationship stuff is what you just suck at.
I have heard that before. Yeah.
She's like, you had a rep before I dated you. I thought like I should have known. But I'm just like, man, and she said it. And I was like, it made me look at myself in that one. I'm like, well, yeah, I guess the career stuff, and that's what I've been focused on, right? I was using that as a vehicle to exit the traumas of my past, the poverty, all of that stuff. And I wasn't really focused on the right thing. So wrapping this up quickly in a little nice bow, I never wanted to go to therapy because of the things in my past, because I was like, well, I'm achieving in spite of, and didn't realize that I still needed to go and look at some of that stuff. And, you know, one of the things that I boil down when I think about mental health and therapy and all of that is that, one, you know, I think it's important to stay here. It doesn't mean that you are broken. Many of us go because we are broken and there's something to fix, but that does not mean that we are broken people. It's not it's a human condition that we're all dealing with, human existence. I like to say it simply and kind of flippantly as, you know, when you were a kid, your parents either held you too much or too little. And one of those, there's no way you can hold somebody the exact right amount of time. And they either held you too much or too little or didn't, and then everything else stems from there. And when you boil it down that way, it's just human problems, man. My impetus was that I had messed up behaviors. I don't curse anymore, y'all, but I would have said effed up behaviors, and was confronting them in an instant where I was crying to my boys, telling you, I'm sick, y'all. You remember those calls? I know I called Austin. Man, he was like, you were not
every
sick.
Single last one of them.
It was bad because I had for the first time really looked at, whoa, the impacts on others, but also like, what am I doing? Like, I'm better than this. I'm better than what's swirling in my life. And I went to a therapist, and similar to you, it was because also I had for the first time started making six figures. And in my mind, that meant that I was rich, right? And rich people go to therapy is what
coming from where we came from. It's a flex. It absolutely is that thing that
was not,
it was almost never attainable. It was never attainable, really. I mean, I didn't have health insurance as a kid.
And that's the other thing. I think, even when I did have, we don't actually understand our benefits enough as a community.
No, we don't know
what to explore. So we hear health insurance and we think it is only your PCP or emergent care type of things, but like, we don't actually explore the mental and behavioral health aspects of our benefits. So that's another thing too. If you think that you need to go see a therapist, you think it's expensive, but you actually have no clue. You haven't explored what your deductibles are, what your coverage is. So a lot of people just need to go do that.
Yeah.
And when I started in Seattle, now I'm actually given more of a specific timeline, but when I started in Seattle, I went to go see a woman, and it was all about the relationship stuff, I'm doing too much. And I went to one session and she gave me some advice that I was like, nah, that don't sound right at all. So I just decided to never go back. And, at the time, actually, and this is kind of getting into another question I wanted to ask you, but at the time I was hesitant because the woman I went to go see was a white woman. And I thought that I needed to see a black therapist. And I know that that's something that everyone in our community considers. And I didn't mean everyone. Like, we're thinking, okay, is this person going to understand my problems? And back to that comment about human condition, being black in the context of my problems was circumstantial. My problems were human problems. And I needed someone that understood and can help me navigate human problems. And that person did not have to identify in the same way as me to be able to help me through that. Unfortunately, at this time, Nancy was not the person to help me through that. But, we'll get into it a little deeper, but I'll say my therapist presently is a white man and I absolutely love him. I had a person of color before him. Not love that person, but this person is way better for me. And I think just closing up the impetus conversation, it's important to just start, y'all. And if there's no other call to action that we leave you with is you can't afford to delay this process any longer.
Yeah.
And hear me clearly. This is the voice of the universe thing. Hear me and
Uncle Phil voice.
You really cannot afford to delay this. So if you need to go explore the insurance, you need to go find free services, you need to do whatever you need to do to go just talk to someone. Do not let someone's race or self-identification be a barrier to you going to talk to someone about the things that you have going on inside of you, the things that have happened to you in your past, and the things that you want to become and do in your future. You need to go to therapy.
We definitely gonna clap that up, because that is, other podcasts ain't doing that. I'm gonna tell you, because that's a level of vulnerability that I don't think people are ready to do. But when you do the work, it feels so good to be on the other side of that work. So I commend you, my brother. I'm so happy you're here.
Yeah, and we're not as enlightened as we are. We're not back.
No, so we're not flawless.
You gave the Maslow's hierarchy of needs reference earlier. So we're not self actualized, right? We're not at the top of that hierarchy yet. We're just working through it. And as people say, it's a journey. And I think that's another one we should probably talk about, demystifying the healing journey. Like, right. And to this wanting to figure it out and the impetus, I wanted the right therapist immediately. And I didn't get her. And what I didn't share, y'all, is it took me 6 years to actually go and try again. And I delayed. So me and Stu could have both been sitting here saying we've been in therapy for over 5 years, but I started and didn't continue because I didn't hear what I wanted the first session and just gave up.
Well, Go ahead. When you said you were going to therapy, I was very excited because I had shared with you like some of the groundbreaking, conversations that I've had probably like 7 different therapists over the last few years, you know. Like, I had a therapist during, you know, the pandemic. I had a therapist during, you know, my early days of corporate America. I have a bunch of different, they serve different purposes for different seasons.
That's important. Let's super, stick there for a bit,
super
man.
Super important.
And sorry if that was interrupting your thought.
No, that's perfect. I was going to say, I'm just happy that you started, because I knew once you started, even if you didn't find the right person, this is still now in your orbit a lot more than it would have been before.
Yeah. And so, right, you've got this network of folks, you've got people with whom you've been engaged in a relationship, you've got friends, and listen to what Stu's saying. He's passively saying, yo, I've looked at you and been like, this dude needs therapy for years, and I may have suggested it, but now I'm glad that you started.
I was relieved, then you get this groundswell
of people who have been looking at you through eyes that you couldn't possibly use.
You gotta let people get there.
I'm so happy that you are going
let people get there.
And y'all don't realize how many of us, especially folks who, it's funny because I'm an intuitive in many ways, yet I couldn't see into myself. And we'll get into what that really means actually when I talk about what doing the work looks like for me in therapy. Mm-hmm. But I see into a lot of people, and I can see the things that other folks are carrying. But oftentimes, we, even though we can see the things that we're carrying or we know it, we just won't face it.
Yeah.
And you really, and all of us are looking at a bunch of people carrying around a bunch of things, and we're seeing things that we've always seen in the human condition, and we're seeing it pop up and manifest in different ways in folks, and we just want everyone to be better. And when that person goes and does the thing to get better, you're like, yes, yes. And it's then you kind of get in this cool little club, right? So like, the people who name drop things like, oh, I was talking to my therapist, you look at them like, you got a therapist? Like, yeah, hey. Like, okay.
Look at the big brains on Brett.
Yeah. That's good, man. But it's one of those things, right? Like, uh-huh. And then you just get to casually speak this lingo of people who are on a journey to heal themselves.
Self-actualization, which is a term that I don't know that I really would have been super privy to pre-therapy.
I learned that in like third grade because I'm a weirdo.
Yeah, but like, what it actually means is like, yeah, I mean, I know the word, but like, what does it mean and what work you need to do to get there?
So, all right, let's talk about this whole journey thing that people are always talking about. You know, because I was just telling y'all that I tried to go and I tried to find Clear or TSA PreCheck when I was doing my journey. Like, yo, this line is too long. And seriously, when I did arrive at going to therapy this year, so 5 years later, it's April, I'm going to therapy. And when I got there, like, what's seeming to bother you today? And it's that moment where you just have this word vomit of, yo, I'm bringing you 34 years of problems right now. Let's solve them all. So
yeah, like, you might want to stretch something.
Give me the priority line, whatever line you need, let's jump to it. Right. But also, I am an extremely self-aware and incisive person, and I do a lot of journaling and just, I'm in deep thought all the time. Wayne constantly tells me I'm his deep thinker. Out of all of his patients, I'm assuming. But I am a real deep thinker, and which is something that I also am working on in therapy, of how to not get caught in a thought loop. But man, you should see the notes this dude sends me for the podcast. He's always
your mind literally is always on. At any moment,
it's ridiculous.
Early in the morning, late at night, it doesn't matter. Like, your mind is always on.
So I'm a deep thinker. And even before therapy, I was into journaling. So on the February trip we took to, Aurora, Colorado for your birthday?
Yeah.
Y'all saw me journaling, or Mike was laughing because I was journaling in the car. Or this was actually, this might have been in November when we went to Deep Creek. We do a lot of things.
Might have been. Either way, we do a lot of
saw me journaling trips. In the car. He's like, what you about to do, journal? And I'm like, yeah, this is just on a road trip. I'm just quiet journaling. That's just how. Yeah. And this is before I was going to therapy. So the way that I do work in therapy is that I bring my journal entries in and I read them. And then I'm really just looking for additional perspective, someone to confirm or say, maybe you need to look at this a different way. But there's no homework for me because I do pre-work.
Right.
And I do a lot of the, it's like I bring in lesson plans and syllabi and say, let's actually discuss this together and then let's do it there. Right, yeah.
I almost cursed. What a fucking nerd.
But yeah, man, so
that's
like,
why we're friends. It makes sense.
It's absolutely why we're friends. But yeah, the journey itself, I guess, is like my, like I bring in, like I got my boarding pass every week when I come in, right?
Right.
I'm going to beat this metaphor to death, y'all.
I'm checked in.
Yeah. But when you talk about that journey, what does that really mean to you? What does the term journey mean?
I don't actually like the term journey.
Cool.
So let's throw that out immediately. It's, I think it's
you can throw it out. I'm going to keep it. But
that's fine. For me, I'm going to throw that out because I think it's like the word culture. Like, I'm sick of seeing it. I'm sick of hearing it. It's like, okay, when you use the word. All right,
hold on a second now. I'm looking at the top of our podcast studio screen. It says, I get it. We own culture, which is LLC.
It makes sense. But like, when it's used and people don't actually understand it, it mm-hmm. loses meaning. And that's the portion of it that, you know, people do messed up, effed up stuff and say it's part of my journey. You know what I'm saying? It's like, it's like, oh, yeah. Well, you know, I'm out of the door. And I've been that person before. But for me, it's just constant evolution. When people think journey, they think destination. And it's like, it's hard to think about a journey and not a destination. So for me, simple minded
therapy reflection, go for it.
It's a constant evolution. It's like, It's how are we going to be a little bit better today? How are we going to, and you spoke to this last podcast, how are we going to unburden ourselves so we can pick other things up? How are we going to reach to, and we watch Dragon Ball Z, how are we going to get to the next form? You know what I'm saying? Like that for me is how final I think form. About it.
But even final form is kind of a destination.
Yes, without the final form. Yes, and you're such a nerd. I hate talking to you about stuff like this because you're going to fact check me. But yes, how do you get to the next form in a way that's intuitive, in a way that's genuine, because you want to be a better version of yourself? I won't say better person because everybody's idea of what that looks like mm-hmm. is different. But journey is just like that just makes me feel like as soon as I hear journey, I'm just like, oh, God. OK, I get it.
So two thoughts on that. One, my favorite unit in literature when I was in middle school or high school. Whatever, man. Y'all get to forget. So,
unit, baby.
This is why I was fighting all the time when I was back in Brooklyn because I talk different. So
that's right. Yeah, I got that too.
My favorite unit of study was existentialism, and I think it might be like 10th grade lit or something like that. And
shout out to the French.
Shout out to them, and I loved existentialism because in the book, and I actually don't recall who wrote this, but I don't know if it's a short story play or a book, but Waiting for Godot. And in Waiting for Godot, it's essentially the concept is explained of existentialism that the destination is more important than the end. I mean, the journey is more important than the destination, excuse me.
I know what you mean.
So in therapy, my first therapist this year, who back to the choosing the therapist demographic, I was seeking someone who was a person of color, thinking that that was the only type of person who could understand my traumas and problems. And again, that was circumstantial. The problems were human problems. So, yeah.
Which is important to point out the human problem portion of it. Yeah. Cause that's the base level to race and all that other stuff.
So my first therapist, Maria, she said the one thing I got from that short-lived relationship, the most profound thing I'll say, I won't say one thing and discredit her, but most profound thing was she talked about happiness being a destination and it's an end state. She's like, happiness is not what you should be seeking. What you should be seeking is peace. Like
I gotta clap for that, bro.
Peace, right, Maria, is so we could do this for a couple more weeks, Maria.
Man, it's gotta be like a part two, man. Cause peace is that's the word for me. I always say I just want peace. I don't want any of the BS, just peace. Keep going, brother. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Nah, you're good, man. And that's what we should be seeking. What we should be seeking is peace. And disturbing my peace thereafter was the fact that Maria shout out to DTP and Ludacris. So thereafter, it was the fact that Maria chose to. I said that very weird. That's not at all what she chose to. Maria went out on maternity leave. But
yeah, had that happen to me before.
But when I started therapy the first week of April, by the way, I set a goal for it, y'all. So I was like, hey, I'm going to therapy every month this quarter. April, the first week of April was the start of the second quarter. Every month this quarter, I'm going to therapy. Every week this quarter, I'm going to therapy. And I hit that goal. And I went to like 30 sessions over the year. So, and I just got pushed to monthly yesterday when I talked to Wayne, y'all. So I'm healed. I'm delivered. where was I going with this? So Maria, we started in April, but like May, the end of May, Memorial Day weekend, she's like, oh, by the way, I'm going out on maternity leave and you can choose if, I was like, so why would you even start this relationship with me?
It's
like,
so
you weren't even mine to really therapize with.
Man, I was pissed when that happened to me the first time. And I was like, wait, I mean, I felt a little selfish because I'm like, yeah, I mean, you should still live your life. But also, like, you could have told me. That, I mean, you knew you were pregnant. Like,
on day one, you could have told
me. I mean, like, I'm not going to be here that long.
I could have been with Wayne weeks earlier.
We can talk about that all day.
All right, y'all. So we were talking about the journey. You don't like the term journey, but you gave us a really clean way of understanding its constant evolution. So I don't need to answer that question. Moving on to other things we talked about. We kind of talked about finding your therapist. What I'll hit on a little bit more is that the cost dynamic. Because it is important. And what I will say, because I'm not going to be able to tell anybody else what your pockets can afford, what I will help you do is recontextualize how you're looking at this. And actually, this is a segue into future episodes, because I'm really big on financial stewardship and financial discipline. And this year is really important in that for me. Financial stewardship.
That's right.
So in that vein, it's important for me to state a couple theories that I have regarding money, but specifically pointing them towards mental health and behavioral health. So you can look at, I look at dollars as possibilities. And when you look at, and when you call them a possibility, when you think about spending them, you think about how many possibilities I'm creating with this dollar, or how many possibilities I'm taking away from myself by spending this dollar. So are you using it or are you spending it? Is really important. Cost. And there's a differentiation. So when you use your dollar on therapy, I believe that it is of the same classification as self-care.
Right.
And it absolutely is. But when you think about how you feel about getting a haircut or pedicure, manicure, massages, all of those things that keep you well, it's in that same category. And when you look at it that way, and it's like, well, I'm not going to go out here without a shape up. I'm not going to be outside without having therapy in my life. And those types of things really do help you to look at the necessity in the cost, because there is a cost associated. Now, granted, I'm going to keep it all the way a buck with y'all. I did not pay for therapy at all the entire year that I went. And I have a job with fantastic benefits, I've been learning, as many of my friends have been talking to me through various points
you
of this.
Work for the government. You might as well.
Through this point of my leave of absence journey, my friends have been telling me my benefits are awesome at work. So shout out to job. But and it's been 100% virtual, though. I think that's also important to note. So I have gone down a different path. I've never sat on the therapy. I did go and sit on Nancy's couch that first session. I'm not shouting out Nancy. I didn't say it was nice. I just went to the couch. But beyond that, I've never had that true experience of sitting on the couch, and I didn't feel like I needed that. So, you know, and it's funny, it bring it back to some levity in this. Like right now I'm reminded of the example from Atlanta this final season. And Earn was going to therapy, and his therapist bought him like a blanket to lay on the floor, because he noticed that was a comfort zone for Earn, and he was more relaxed when he laid on the floor rather than the couch. Mm-hmm. And there's so much to be explored about Earn's mental health this season. But I wanted to be physically in someone's office where I could look at their books and see if but now I just stare at Wayne through a screen. But I appreciate that, because I'm coming out of a pandemic instance. So those of you who are now getting more comfortable with telehealth and all of those things, that might be a different option for you. And I'm assuming that the cost might be reduced. Mine was completely free just because of the service from work. But that also helps in that aspect of, okay, what does therapy look like for me? What am I comfortable with? Can I do it? It's a lot more accessible than it used to be.
I think it was because that's how I've always seen it done. Was the couch, because they offered it over the, you could do it over the phone, but it's just that just,
you, you ever
like,
just feel your leather, you ever just touch your leather, supple. All right, so who had the best couch? Who had the best couch out of all the therapists you've been to?
Oh man, Michelle
was,
had
was
the
it
best
Michelle Wynn? Yeah, Michelle, I knew it was Wynn. Michelle, man.
I mean, it was an OCD person's dream. It was clean in there. Like, she had all these books up there. She had a white noise machine. She had a humidifier. And I mean, it was just like,
I'm ready to
tell you my traumas. Like, she.
What was the signature scent in Michelle's office?
What was that?
What was the signature scent in Michelle's office?
I love lavender. That was the one that she would.
I actually don't know that.
I feel like she knew that. We had a conversation about it, and then she like constantly made it. And that's when I really noticed what the scent was. So I think she had game, bro. She had game.
We're going to spend this last 15 getting into some of the fun stuff about therapy right now, right? Like, we gave y'all enough reflections. We'll keep talking about therapy.
Yeah, it's going to be a constant
thing. That would make me uncomfortable.
What?
My therapist, like, you know, don't pay that much. Now it's too intimate. Like, oh, yeah, I didn't like this. So now I'm thinking about that urn thing differently.
Trying to have sex with me? Like what is going on here?
Well, see, that would have been my problem anyway going in there. Like, look, Michelle, we done already talked about I got some warped thoughts. Like, but... But like the familiarity with therapists is funny because there is a line, but you also want to feel comfortable. And in my case, I caught Wayne being very familiar one time. By the way, I'm certain my therapist Googles me. There's no way I come in there and tell you the stuff that I'm telling you and you don't go look me up. So like that's also funny. But I
talk, Zan. Yeah, look me up, Google me, son. What's good?
Or if nothing else, just fact check to see if I'm a psychopath and I'm not living out my raps. But hey, look, like,
my bio is sturdy, dog. That's all I got to say. My joint's sturdy.
One time, we were getting off the phone or off the Zoom call, whatever it was, and he's like, "All right, brother," and I hit the end as he was saying, "Brother." But I know that had to be super awkward because he was trying to catch himself from how familiar he got in the moment. Right. Like, oh, Wayne thinks I'm cool. Like, I'm in there now. but you don't really need that. You've got to be very responsible because if you think you're friends with your therapist or you think they think you're cool, you may go in there and spin stories or try to tell it from angles. Like, you've got to be very, full in how you talk to your therapist. And I think that's important. Because you're basically painting pictures of every character in your world to them. Yeah. And it's from a biased perspective. It's skewed, if nothing else. And I know Wayne and I are very intentional. I give a lot of context. I'm a high context person anyway, as you all can tell. But I give a lot of context to the people I'm telling them. It's like, oh, and I'm sure this person must feel this way. And let me give you how I know that I've impacted them in the conversations that we've had, because I don't want to give this perspective of like, Zan's got this perfect view. And,
right.
And your therapist knows when you're BSing. Sides. But yeah, they know when you're not really giving a full picture too.
Oh yeah.
But all right. So just bringing it back in though, the lavender thing. I don't want anyone being that attuned to my needs and that you're just okay. I know you like lavender, so I got the lavender hand soap and I put a little mint on your pillow.
She didn't
on my
even
couch.
Say anything. She just I just noticed it. I mean, no words are exchanged about her doing this. I just noticed it.
Oh okay. Shout out to Dr. Melfi.
I put the magazines out there, Tony, because I knew you were going to rip a page out.
you feel like Tony Soprano a little bit when you go to therapy. You got to admit, like, he's informed our whole context of therapy since 2006.
I mean, it's such an integral part of the show. Like, and obviously it shows the stigma too, because everybody is like talking shit about him because he's going to therapy.
So this is important. This we actually need to say, and this is actually probably a pin in the comedic part, but also serious. So Tony was in therapy having the crisis of leadership often. Yep. And now at where we are in our career and lives, we are leaders in the realest way we've ever been. And when you go into therapy, you're actually seeing it from that perspective a bit of like, no, these are leadership problems too. And that's back to where your problems aren't like, they're not black problems, white, Latino, whatever. Right. It's like, these are problems of humans. So
human
humans
condition.
Who are in leadership positions go through these things and have experienced these things. So man, sitting there watching people like Tone, and I'm like, I can see how it is when you got to go back to your organization and tell them, hey, I've been seeing, quote, the shrink, or I've been dealing with mental health issues. And another thing to note, it's important to note that depression, anxiety, these are conditions and they are disabilities. Mm-hmm. And we need to destigmatize disability as well. And it's important to note that disability, back to being human condition, can touch you at any given point in time.
Right.
So it like one day you could wake up, a physical disability can come upon you. Your brain could process things differently than it once did. It could happen at any given time. And disability does not always have to be a permanent condition or a permanent situation or state. So in that same vein, having ever experienced depression, and we all have experienced depression, right? That is at that point in time, disability. And it's one of those things now when you apply to jobs and all that and they ask you to self-ID, that's actually listed. Have you ever experienced anxiety? And it's not to filter, it's actually an OFCCP and government type of requirement, but it's not to filter you out and say, we don't want people with disabilities working here. But when you really look at that phrase, and I know that there are some who don't like the term disability, but I mean, from an industrial standpoint, I promise you all it's okay to say. Or as a DEI practitioner, that is. But when you think about what the etymology of that term really is, right?
Etymology, writing it down.
And it does impact your ability to perform. And in the context of, And that doesn't mean that you can't mitigate or navigate around that impact, but you have an impact to your ability to do certain things. And when you think about depression, when you are in a depressive state, you can't do things. Like, yeah. like sometimes it's simple things, and like you can't get out of bed, you can't animate in the way that you once would, and all that stuff. So I think what I'm trying to say here is that when you are going through these things, right, it can't help but affect you. And even simple tasks of like being mindful while you're driving, you'll miss your stops and the exits and things like mm-hmm. that. Those are also cues that should be telling you, hey, I need to slow down and go talk to somebody about these things that are now viscerally affecting the way that I do my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
So we talked about
Tone. We were going to be funny and do
yeah,
the lighter
man,
side.
It's hard, man.
Got right back into it.
Look, y'all. All right. Flat out then. Give me a funny therapy story or reflection.
Oh man. I'm trying not to give. So shout out to Zoe Reyes, my therapist in New York, who was fantastic before.
You are a name dropper.
I got to show love to people that have helped me.
So during get them clients. Yeah, shout out to
Zoe. During the pandemic
Reyes
was like the toughest. I mean, that was one of the toughest stretches of my life. I was in a relationship that was difficult, and you know, I was coming to this reckoning of, you know, who I am and who I want to be and what I want my future to look like. And my therapist just kind of out and said, look, I can't tell you what to do, but I think you know what you got to do. You know, it's almost like it's funny to me because it's like the Sopranos when they're like, I took care of my friend upstate. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Which I really appreciated because
I'm
like,
saying it's inferred.
It's inferred, right? And I was like, what is this? An episode of Sopranos? I feel like I'm gonna get whacked, and we just laughed about that. But that was one of my really good stories with Zoe. We've had she really helped me kind of. I'm a very self-deprecating person. I try not to be such a braggadocious kind of person. I've accomplished quite a bit.
Braggadocious word of the day?
What was that?
Braggadocious.
People know what braggadocious is, man. but she was really instrumental in me. She basically, the message was, yo, you're allowed to talk your shit. You've been through a lot. You've been through so much more than a person could say they've been through in a lifetime before you turn 30. So like you have absolutely earned the right to take care of yourself, to, you know, speak highly of yourself and to own the rooms and spaces that you've been in, because literally that's your superpower. That's what God gave you. And it was just so instrumental. I keep telling people this. Therapy was the thing that, beyond massages and haircuts and whatever, buying a Rolex, whatever it is, that was the one thing for myself that I'm like,
man.
Yo, this, I'm so happy I did this because I learned so much about myself.
Yeah, 10 out of 10 would recommend.
Absolutely.
So happy that I've done this. All right, great reflections. I'm glad you did not get whacked. I'm glad you and Zoe had a laugh about it.
That means getting killed, by the way, for folks that aren't, you know, familiar with mafia speak.
Who doesn't know? I mean, the United States has made sure that everybody is familiar with mafia speak over the last 52 years.
That's fair.
So on that,
even
idea,
Moulin Yan.
I just had to go ruin my day, y'all. Oh man! All right, so man, you know, Justin got called the N-word at the Thompson Hotel here in Dallas, man.
Wait, really?
Valet. Yeah,
at the valet.
Yeah, look, I'm gonna put y'all on blast. Thompson Hotels. I think it was
actually
nuts. But all right, going back into Zoe and your story about getting whacked and all that. I guess if I'm thinking about a funny story with therapy, what is mine? I guess just in general, I find myself blacksplaining things to my therapist because he is not black.
That's great,
and it's fun to do. Because it's, I mean, I have to do it all the time to many of the people
in my
corporate
work,
environment
yeah.
that is not. Does not represent me fully, right. Or broadly in numbers. So when I when I talk about stuff, it's like I got to give a little additional context, and I probably don't have to. That's why I call it blacksplaining. Like, he probably knows exactly what I'm talking about, but I'd be like, I'm explaining my do-rag affinity to him. So it's like, well, you know, people in my community really do love wearing these things over. Like, there's no reason for him to say that. I feel like he's looking at me like, I know what do-rags are. Like, it's 2022.
But I love that because they do that to us, and we're wait, I absolutely know what that is.
Yeah, I got MGMT albums as well, bro.
Like, I like Rat-a-tat. You know what I'm saying? Like, I like Goo Goo Dolls. I get
Empire
it.
Of the Sun. Look, I'm just giving you all the stuff that you listened to in the 2010s on road trips.
That Coachella story, we got to get that queued up.
Yeah, but I think that's really just my favorite thing about therapy, y'all, is, I mean, there's mad funny stuff that's happened, but the idea of how I have to come in, well, in my community, there's a colloquialism we often use, get it out the mud. And then I just set the ground stage there, and then I go into my full story. It just take a beat, and it's just fun to me at this point.
That just reminded me of Boomerang, colloquialism.
Hey man, y'all, we talk in movie quotes and song lyrics, y'all, and I hope that you speak the code. And with that, I think it's time for us to actually close out, probably, because we're at this hour mark. We want to keep it down to the lunch break. Thank you for listening to us on your Monday. If you did tune in on drop date, go to therapy.
We appreciate that. And, we do talk in quotes. That's a good point.
Yeah. And by the way, I'm gonna just slide this in so we can make this the episode title. My therapist don't even like you for real. Because when you said that about Zoe, that's what I was trying to get to. It's like, she told me what I should do. I was like, there's that thing where we're not talking about it, but when we tell our therapist what's going on with the people in our lives, like, my therapist don't even really rock with you like that.
No, for real. And my therapist was Afro-Latina, so she really was on some, yeah. You know what I'm saying? She was not playing those games.
My
but
therapist don't even want me messing with you like that. So
look, that's a conversation for another day, man. And we also want to drop, because people have picked up on the fact that you actually don't love Anita Baker's music. You also are not a fan of David Alan Grier. So I just wanted to point that out.
That was an unnecessary shot at David Alan Grier. But okay,
but you like him though.
So y'all, we will come back to this.
This is a story.
I'm so far ahead of myself that I'm about to pass me twice. So I'll let y'all know that yesterday I mentioned David Alan Grier in a certain way that I can't tell you yet. But in, let's give it 2 months, I'll tell you why David Alan Grier is hilarious in this moment.
That is a very long time, but I hope
hey, that's getting him a reason to stay with us, man. You got to get the people on the teat.
Revolution.
Get them hooked on the stuff. This is blue magic.
That just reminded me of Knocked Up when Ryan Seacrest went crazy.
Yo, we're not going to end this podcast on time, y'all. Okay, come on, cut us off. Give us a song. Outro music.
My bad.
Yeah. Sometimes we laugh, sometimes we cry, but I guess you know.
Get out here and go enjoy our Friday. It's a nice day outside.
Baby,
I'm about to hit this gym again.
I took a half and she took the whole thing.
Man, 2 days.
Ooh, I'm about to get the muscles on y'all.
We took a trip, now we on your block, and it's like a ghost town.
I want to hit this note. I'm glad I didn't try.
Where did these niggas be at when that's not the one. That's not it. Tired of beefing you bombs, you can't even pay.
Yo, this mic got auto tune.
Been waking up in the crib, but sometimes I don't even know where I'm at.
I can get you in the head.
Songs in this party, I can't even listen to that. Anytime that I run into somebody, it must be a victory lap. Hey, shawty, come sit on my lap. Hey, this ain't Drizzy, just snap. This in between us is not.